Basically, I'm going to talk about kind of things I've been doing over the last few years, and this is related to study of time-dependent correlation functions in the liquid. Going back to the general sort of approach, I should say here that it's a bit like when Professor Langer was talking about 2 weeks back that he was taking the position that we're going to talk about this from the glass side. What I'm going to talk about here today actually is from the other side, it's the liquid side. And as you cool the liquid, as it gets more dense, how does correlation changes? I mean, what's the nature of the correlation and all that? That's the the main approach here. So I'm coming from the liquid state side and then seeing how the liquid gets dense, how correlated dynamics can become important, what are the signatures of that kind of things. So here I should first acknowledge the collaborators. These are my students who have earlier worked, and also Bhaskar is presently working on this. Also, part of the work I'm going to talk about here is done with Jean-Louis Barra from Lyon. This is something that we did in an Indo-French collaborative research grant that we have between India and France. So part of the research was funded by the Indo-French Center. I should also acknowledge, I think, Professor Chandan Dasgupta. He'll be here later on. And the kind of thing I'm going to talk about, particularly towards the end, has links with what he did earlier. So we had a lot of discussion, and I should acknowledge that here also, I think. Okay, so this is just a brief kind of synopsis of the topics I'm going to touch. First of all, this idea of correlation function and all that, I'm going to kind of focus it in the direction of this discussion of correlation length, which has drawn a lot of attention in recent times, the issue of correlation length in a glass forming liquid. So while I talk about basic statistical mechanical equations for fluids and all that, the idea is to look for signatures of such things in dense liquids coming from a liquid state, the basic equations of fluid. In that, of course, first I'll talk a little bit on what is the idea of correlation length. I guess that is pretty much known to everyone here. And then just discuss a little on the static correlation length that people talk about, though I'm not going to really discuss or analyze such correlation length. Maybe it would be better to just mention that here. Maybe I'll spend one or two transcripts on that. And then I'll get to the length scales, which are related to dynamics of the fluids, and this is also linked to dynamic heterogeneities that people have talked about in recent years about glassy physics a lot. And in this, I'll touch the issue of propagating shear waves, which I talked, which I did some work some years back, just a few little bit discussion of that. Then we'll really focus on the four-point correlation functions and how you calculate such things. And where does this issue is related to non-Gaussian behavior in fluids, and one can look at non-Gaussian parameters, and I'll try to show you where these two gets related. And in doing this, I'll use a model for the liquid, which is basically related to the equations that gives rise to the mode coupling theory of liquids. Though I'm not going to talk about much of the usual mode coupling terminology and all that, the ideal glass transition and all that, but the basic equations that I'll be using for this, which we have studied, are the same. And then if time permits, I'll discuss some of the non-equilibrium dynamics that we have studied with those kind of calculations and modified stress exponential relaxation and all that. This I'll come to if time permits. Okay, first of all, the correlation length, basically it is in the context of static critical phenomena, second order phase transitions, it's a correlation of fluctuations at two different spatial points, equilibrium correlation at the same time. Let's say static, even this is the simplest one, the static correlation function. And as you approach an the critical point, this shows sort of a exponential correlation growing, and this length zeta, which goes to infinity as you approach the critical point, this is what is what has become a very important issue in our understanding of the static critical phenomena. As you know, that this, how this correlation affects every other physical properties, all the scaling hypothesis and everything can be understood in terms of that. So in the context of usual critical phenomena language, the static correlation function shows a divergence the decay of the correlation function, the length scale over which it decays becomes diverging as one approaches the critical point. And of course, the fluctuations which are important in the fluid are then becoming, as you approach the transition, becoming important up to the length scale of the critical, this correlation length. So this was one big issue, important step in understanding of critical phenomena. That is, that when you look at the theories of such systems near the critical point, it's not only that you have to take into account fluctuations, which are very short length scale, and do a hydrodynamic kind of theory, but fluctuations of all length scale going up to the correlation length. So this idea of correlation length played a very important role in our understanding of critical phenomena. Now, with glass transition and all that, this has drawn of late, it has drawn actually more attention, though the idea goes back quite a while earlier due to Adam and Gibbs. That is that you can relate you can think of the glassy behavior due to a cooperatively rearranging region, which is I'm calling CRR, and basically at a very simple level, one can relate the different configurations of CRR if you make a very simplified assumption that it's independent of temperature and the number of particles which are involved. That is independent of the number of configurations it can take. So if you have a total n number of particles and each CRR has n number of small n number of particles, then and each of them can have so many configurations, you can roughly calculate the number of configurations in this way, and then one can relate the configuration entropy to that, to an inverse dependence of the size of the cooperatively rearranging region. So this becomes a very important relation, that this size, entropy is related to the inverse of the size of the cooperatively rearranging region. And then, of course, if this such relaxations are occurring because of some barrier crossing, then I'm just trying to give the very basic argument of this, that if this is occurring because of a crossing a barrier of the size of EB, then the barrier height naturally is expected to be proportional to the number of particles involved in the CRR. So you get an idea of the barrier is inversely proportional to the configuration entropy, and the relaxation time, of course, in an activated process will be like that. And if SC goes...
Why is the barrier inversely proportional to SC?
Which one?
You said the barrier is inversely proportional to the configurational entropy.
Because the barrier is proportional to N.
That's proportional to N.
That is why it is inversely proportional to SC. And so one can think of, if this is of the size of, if D is the dimensionality of the problem, then the relaxation time grows as epsilon to the power D. And so there the correlation length, as the size of the correlation length grows, the relaxation time can grow very large. So this is sort of related to some kind of, what I just talked about is static correlation length, related to some kind of static correlation function. What I'm going to mainly focus on are length scales which are related to dynamics in the sense that which are sick is kind of, you draw the extracts of it from the dynamic correlations in the fluid. And in this, as we have understood more the nature of the particle dynamics, you know, from more and more computer simulations coming in, that the particle dynamics is very heterogeneous, spatially heterogeneous. That is, one particle in a particular position might remain more mobile for certain times and then move into a different regime. And so the way that this complex dynamics evolves has special heterogeneity even in the in its dynamical behavior. Now, from these kind of studies of molecular dynamics, studies of simple liquids even, one can look at signatures of correlation functions, which I'll talk about, where you see some sort of a growing length scale, though it is not really diverging, but you can identify length scales which are growing. Now, these kind of studies can be quite well looked into through using models which gave rise to mode coupling theory, because one of the basics of mode coupling is that such equations are that they look into how the dynamics of the fluid as the liquid gets more dense, how the correlated dynamics is taken into account. So these has roots in earlier, you know, more kinetic theory kind of approach, where you look at correlated dynamics by looking at rings and repeated rings and such things. Similar ideas are actually reflected in taking into mode coupling models and looking at dynamical properties. So this we used in looking at such correlation functions. And one of the things that one can very naturally incorporate in such studies is that the effect of structure. You can put the theory is contained in a way that you can look at the equilibrium structure, put the equilibrium structure as an input into calculating the dynamics, and then it follows naturally from the equations. Now, this is generally, as I said, the beginning, applicable to higher temperature regimes than usually where you will see a complete freezing and the TG and all that. Now, one of the calculation that I mentioned at the beginning I'll talk about is related to shear waves. Now, as we know that even a normal liquid at very high frequency behaves like a solid, because you give a very quick disturbance and then it behaves like a solid over a very short time scale. Now, as the density of the liquid grows, this time scale over which it behaves like a solid increases, and this gets reflected in the behavior of the shear mode. Usually the shear mode is a diffusive mode, whereas at very short length scale you'll find you'll find the shear as a propagating shear wave mode, and the maximum wavelength of that propagating shear wave can go up to only certain value, and then it's a propagating, it's no longer a propagating mode, it's like a shear, diffusive shear mode. And this is something Ray Mountain looked in 97 using soft shear simulation, where he calculates the correlation function, the transverse correlation function, and usually you'll expect a diffusive decay will give you a plane exponential decay, where you see this thing going into an oscillatory mode, and this to the maximum wavelength he can see it was actually increasing as he goes to lower and lower temperature or in such system. So one can relate a dynamic kind of length scale, this we talked about, from using MCT. And let me just very briefly kind of mention what is done there. Usually MCT is something that gives you effects of
Is there an easy way to estimate the crossover length scale where the shear waves go from?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to talk about.
You're going to come to that. Yeah. Okay.
So, let's say in the simplest form of the mode coupling theory, what one does is that if you look at, let's say this is of course not MCT, this is just a simulation. But what do you see? And this is not really related to glass. It's just the velocity autocorrelation function, and you see that it goes negative beyond a certain time. Now, usually you'll expect that at high temperatures, this shows completely exponential decay. So you have a velocity correlation function showing exponential decay. It goes negative, and this is something you understand in terms of using MCT and all that. If you look at short time models of fluids, it will only give you an exponential decay. Of course, when you integrate this, you get the diffusion coefficient, the velocity correlation function, and this gives a negative part to it, and so that's why the diffusion coefficient falls, and this is why we say that MCT gives rise to the cage effect and all that. So basically, the velocity correlation function going negative gives rise to the cage effect and all that. This is, of course, for a simple fluid. But one can extend such studies to the supercooled regime. And basically, what one is looking at is the transverse current-current correlation function. And this is a general form of this memory functions. And one can look at the correction to the shear viscosity coming from the mode coupling effect. And when you look into this this thing from as coming from density fluctuations, one can actually calculate the wave number up to which you see propagating shear modes in the fluid. This is something that I did back in 98. And what happens is as you increase. If
propagating shear modes are necessary for
propagate, well, this is only happening up to a certain wave number, keep in mind. So you are thinking, yes, if it is at all length scale you are propagating shear waves, then of course you have damaging shear viscosity. But this is the point, that as you are approaching this ideal MCT transition, that you need this up to certain wave vector. Then beyond that, it is propagate, diffusive mode.
Is that length scale related to the ones that can be calculated for inhomogeneous MCT?
This is not related to inhomogeneous MCT. Inhomogeneous MCT is something where you break the translational symmetry.
Spatial. Case that you get out of that by looking at the correlation.
Yeah, but this is something even in equilibrium. That's why I was just going to say that this kind of correlation length, you're basically getting the growth because of the shear viscosity going large. And when you go to the transition point and the shear viscosity diverges, then you have this propagating mode at all length scale. So,
shear viscosity is diverging.
Yes.
But you're getting the propagating mode because of the, basically the system has an elastic constant.
Yeah, at that length scale.
That length scale.
But you are not still in the state. I'm talking about a theoretical model. You are not still in the situation where the shear viscosity, the static shear viscosity is diverging. So shear viscosity up to a certain length scale seems like behaving like it is giving like a solid kind of response. And then beyond that, it is not.
But the time scale over which you get an elastic response goes as the shear modulus by viscosity, right? Other way around.
Yeah.
So if the viscosity diverges, doesn't it go to...
When the viscosity diverges, then you will see elastic behavior, right? Because you have the 1 over omega dependence. So the omega times that will give you a elastic behavior.
But viscosity by modulus, so when the viscosity becomes large,
it becomes a modulus.
So but elastic response over all time.
That will happen in the ideal glassy phase, when you have the viscosity diverging at all length scale. But this is happening only up to certain length scale as you are approaching this point.
Basically, the stress relaxation function in the glass in MCT doesn't decay anymore. Basically, the time interval is
that will be the case when you are in the glassy phase. And this is something that, remember, this is not really just related to doing self-consistent mode coupling. Even if you do, as I was saying at the beginning, normal mode coupling theory where you do not have any divergence, because of this the mode coupling effect, you will see up to certain length scale the system behaving like a solid. And that length scale grows as you are increasing the density.
I don't know if this is what Kumaran is asking, but in this standard MCT, is the diverging length, the diverging time scale, is it intrinsically related to a length scale that has diverged?
No. That is basically the point. You have a feedback mechanism from which this diverging time scale is coming. You do not need a diverging, a length scale to drive that divergence. That's the crucial point. It's a theory which is not independent of structure, but it's a theory which is insensitive to structure. That means even if you don't have any feedback, any diverging static correlation, and this is where it differs very largely from the static critical phenomena, where you have a diverging correlation length. The static case. Okay.
Intuition understanding?
Then I have to start talking about mode coupling theory here. I'm not going to talk about that here. But of course, you can look at this way, that as the liquid is getting more dense, there are different kind of effects that come into it. One is the structure. Because of the structure, first of all, there is the cage effect, that you have the fluid getting stuck, the particles getting stuck into the cage over some time scale at least. So those kind of effect, then there's a backflow effect that comes in the fluid, you know, that which gives rise to usual long time tails in velocity correlation function. All these things are taken into account when you look into these mode coupling terms. So what is happening is, when you correct the transport coefficients with such terms, you are incorporating in the theory those effects, and it gives this thing slows down the system. And because the density correlation function is related to it, it produces a self-consistent feedback mechanism, whereby if such thing could persist for all time, the system beyond a certain temperature or density will get into a non-ergodic phase. By non-ergodic phase, I mean that the correlation function does not decay anymore. So that is as much one can say in words about this nonlinear effect.
I guess I don't understand the statement about the length scale. I mean, yeah. I thought that the better understanding of the mode coupling theory was precisely that there was a diverging length scale associated with the critical point. Diverging length scale was, of course, the spatial correlations in the dynamics, not purely the structure. Saying that there's no diverging length scale, going back to this weird idea of the cage.
No, I know what you are trying. I'm going to go into those things. I know what you are talking about. Let's.
In the original MCT, there is no correlation in space by a mean field type factorization.
Well, even if the static structure factor is perfectly well behaved, you do not see any the theory would not change its content.
Just like ferromagnetic in mean field theory, if you started off with factorization of linear response, you still have a divergent correlation link. So you don't put it in, but you can still recover it, except there it's static.
Okay, so this was the correlation, the maximum wave number that we could calculate from the theory, and as you can see, it's coming down as the packing fraction increases, and then beyond it. A certain point it smooths off. This is of course the extended MCT that we did there. But let me move on to something else. One of the things that we can also calculate out of this is the tagged particle, tagged particle correlations in the fluid. And I guess this was discussed in yesterday's talk also, that if you take the tagged particle correlation function, it's a single particle correlation function, a Van't Hoff function, where the correlation between the tagged particle density at two different times at a distance r in the isotropic fluid, you take it as just a function of r. And what it says is that at different t, it gives you the chance of seeing the particle at a distance r, and it's sort of, as the time grows, this thing, the envelope becomes flatter, and so the particle has a chance of moving further. One can calculate actually the more realistic thing, that is the 4 pi r squared gs of rt, which will give you the chance probability that you'll see a particle at a distance r, given that the particle was at t equal to 0 t at time t. Of course, this have this kind of envelopes, and at a given time t, of course, it has a maximum at this length, and as the time grows, this thing grows more softer. Now, one,
what are the two different groups?
This was just the GS of RT. I mean, that was a schematic figure.
No.
Oh, that, I'm going to say that. Okay. What are the two different curves? So this solid line is actually what you get by solving the equations with the mode coupling dynamics and all that. The dashed curve is something that you get assuming that, and this is something that we did in analogy with what was done in simulation by Glotzer and others, that you look at the corresponding correlation function. If you assume that the dynamics is completely Gaussian, so you calculate the R square average from it, and using that R square T by 4 dt and all that, you calculate the corresponding Gaussian function. And the corresponding Gaussian function is given by this, and what happens is it crosses it at some maximum distance rm, and what they identified as mobile particles are those particles which are in this part of the tail. So those which have traveled a distance on the average, maximum more than the distance rm, those particles in that area, these are called the mobile particles, and one can actually calculate. This is, of course, a theoretical calculation. One can calculate from the area under this curve, like what is the fraction of mobile particles from this kind of dynamics, and this shows a growth, as you can see. So theoretically, one can look at such correlation functions and generate actually how the the relative the density of the particles grows from this.
This is fairly arbitrary.
Huh?
It's a fairly reasonable arbitrary procedure.
Arbitrary way of defining it, you mean? Yeah. So we just followed what was done in the simulation. But what I'm trying to say is that one can actually reproduce the dynamical from the equations using at least the simple mode coupling kind of effects, the corresponding quantity, and from the area we can make an estimate of the mobile fraction of mobile particles. Yeah.
Since people now have analyzed that this has an exponential tail, so it might be, so looking at the range over which you have the exponential tail may be a better way.
Okay. Another thing people looked at in this thing is the non-Gaussian parameter. And this is basically, this again came from very early works on computer simulations of fluids by Rahman and others, and that is that you calculate the fourth moment of the displacement and divided by this. So this is like a cumulant, and at the second order this is the non-Gaussian parameter. It sort of in a way gives you the deviation from Gaussian behavior. Now we can look at this, actually this thing, because four-point correlation has become, you know, more important these days. We can look at this quantity, and this is actually related to again some kind of four-point correlation functions. As we can see, if we look at the tech particle correlation, this is same as GS and the Fourier transform, and you can expand it like this, and these are functions. So if it was just this, it will be a Gaussian function, and these are higher order quantity cumulants, and the first one is related to the non-Gaussian parameter, and so you can easily see that this such things again are related to four-point correlations in the fluid for four different points, though it's analyzed from the tagged particle correlation, but it's related to the four-point function, and one sees again peak in this four-point function, this non-Gaussian parameter, as the fluid density increases at a certain time, and these are for three different densities or packing fractions. This is again from the MCT equations that we got, and as the density increases, the time over which this peak occurs increases. These are things similar, at least qualitatively similar, to what has been seen in simulations. So such models can be used for studying signatures of dynamic heterogeneity or behavior, non-Gaussian behaviors and all that. Now, more recently I've tried to apply such studies to the case of really the four-point density correlation function, which has been studied a lot in other methods. Now, to do that, we do not take the usual mode coupling approach where you just look at only the lowest order approximation and all that. I wanted to do like a different approach in this. And in that, of course, this is just a basic introduction to the different ways of looking at dynamics. One is the usual kinetic theory way of calculating things, which gets increasingly complicated as you go to higher densities. Of course, then there is MD simulations. But the approach that I'll take here is what is termed as the fluctuating hydrodynamics or the dynamics of slow modes. So basically, you look at the many particle dynamics in terms of the dynamics of a few slow modes, and these slow modes are characterized by underlying conservation laws in the system. Sometimes it is because of broken symmetry in the system. Sometimes for a Brownian particle, it's the heavy inertia, much larger inertia of the particle. So one looks at the dynamics of the fluid in terms of certain set of slow modes and the projected space, which is looked upon as noise. In this, of course, Maurice Wanzek projection operator scheme and all this has been used to study perturbatively the corrections. So the basic structure of these equations is like this, that you have a fluctuating Langevin type equation, generalized Langevin equation, where you have a noise part, and the noise-noise correlation is related to the Baire transport coefficient, Lij 0, which I am calling. The equilibrium distribution for such a system is given by e to the power minus f. So f is called the free energy functional for the system. And this is the reversible part of the dynamics, which remains invariant under t minus e kind of. So this is the general structure of the equation. Of course, for the fluid, we'll come to that in a second. But the idea is to calculate the fluid equation. I'll just come in the next transparency. But the idea is to calculate the correlations of this different fields from such stochastic equations. And basically, at the first part, at least, I look at equilibrium averages. And here, the main focus is on density fluctuations of the dynamic structure factor in the fluid, which is always the quantity of interest. So the basic structure of the fluctuating hydrodynamic equations, let's say in the Brownian case, one can simply look at this, that this is like a dissipative equation, and you have only the dissipative part and the noise. For the isotropic fluid, of course, it's much more involved. I'll show the equations, but basically it is holding the conservation laws for the system, mass, momentum and energy density, and we are looking at fluctuations around the equilibrium state. So let me for once at least show the equations. So at the simplest level, this is the momentum equation and the mass density equation. This is a simple conservation law continuity equation, and then you have the generalized Navier-Stokes equation. And there exists kind of formalism to construct such equations. And this I'll take as really generalizations of the hydrodynamics. At low density, the linear equations of motions are sufficient to consider the dynamics. Nonlinear effects are not so important. Of course, in the supercooled liquid, the cooperative motion become very important, and there the nonlinear effects are important.
F of u, assuming any properties, it's a function of density, right?
It's a function of density. It is f of u is, I mean, the property I'm assuming is, if I take, this is a technical thing, but if I take the free energy functional f as a functional of rho and g, then the kinetic part I separate, and the f of u is the potential part. Now,
just for the novice, in what limit do you recover conventional hydrodynamics from these equations?
T going to zero, y going to zero.
So no fluctuation.
No, fluctuation. I mean, these are equations for the fluctuations. But if you look at only long length scale, you know, long time properties, you the normal hydrodynamics should recover. Of course, they are also because of nonlinear couplings, you will have certain effects. But there has been sort of issues with this, that nonlinear fluctuating hydrodynamic equations, you know, if you just linearize the equation, then of course you have the linear hydrodynamics. But if you take the average of the equation, then it does not reduce to the usual nonlinear hydrodynamic, the usual nonlinear Navier-Stokes equation. And this is where von Kampen and Zwanzig, I think, differs. I mean, Zwanzig's approach is that you take, this is why I wrote this thing, that you take the these equations as the generalizations of hydrodynamics. So I'm not claiming that if I take the average of this, that this should give me Navier. So to answer your question really in depth, that there is a difference there at the nonlinear level. At the linear level, everything is fine.
This LHA is wave number dependent.
Which one?
LHA.
Yeah, in general, you can take it wave number dependent, short time dynamics, but it's the short time part. You can even think of taking, you know, some short time correlation if one doesn't really want to confine to completely white noise. But usually, in all this calculation, we are taking white noise for the short time part.
So it's independent of
density? Lij? Yeah. No. The Bayer transport coefficient depends on density.
You're assuming compressivity?
No, I'm not assuming compressivity.
Density is
I'm not assuming compressivity.
You have the derivative outside the G on.
Which derivative? This one?
Yes.
You want to go low? This is correct.
I mean, Navier-Stokes should give you V not one.
Yeah, that's when you take the incompressible limit. It comes out. Or you can write in terms of a field V, where you can use this and get that Navier-Stokes nonlinearity you are thinking, V grad V. That's when you formulate the theory in terms of V.
Just a co-moving frame.
Pardon?
It's a co-moving frame, yes.
It is, if you can formulate the theory in terms of G and rho, or G and rho and V. If you take V, then you have to take G by rho as V. You see that there's no easy way out taking the G by rho outside it. You'll get extra term. So the usual thing that we see is the incompressible limit of that equation in the constant density case. Now, about mode coupling, I'll just, of all this technical words, one of the reason that coupling of slow modes become important for considering, you know, correlated effects, this I sometimes give this example, that is, if a variable is a slow variable in the system, you'll expect that if it is a conserved variable, you'll expect that such a thing will hold, because A is a conserved quantity, A of x t, t integrated over all x is equal to zero. So this thing will hold, that in the q going to zero limit, the time derivative should go to zero. Now the question is, if A is a slow variable, is the product of A is also a slow variable? And then if you try the same thing there, you see that you get an expression of this type, where this quantity can only be zero, because if the contribution comes from the small k part, and it comes from the small k part because this thing is decaying very fast because of this this relation. So in a sense, that by extending the space of the slow modes from A to the product of A's, we are actually taking into account effects coming from smaller k's, and so correlated effects from longer distances gets involved in the calculation. This is how you bring in cooperativity in the dynamics. The other issue is that usually these are hydrodynamic equations, and sometimes there is objection that why should this be valid at short length scale. One of the validity, the issue of validity of hydrodynamics is that you should consider wavelengths which are which are large compared to the mean free path. So what is happening is when you are at very high density, the fluid particles are so close that the mean free path itself is is much smaller compared to the particle diameter. And so the peak of the structure factor sort of moves. And when you are in this kind of packing fraction regime, you're this is below the corresponding mean free path, and so hydrodynamics gains some validity there. So it is in this sort of spirit such equations are applied for studying very dense fluid state. So what we get out of the effect of the nonlinearities, it basically gives rise to this feedback mechanism that I was mentioning earlier, and which is the self-consistent MCT. I mean, of course, mode coupling theory people have been doing from much earlier stage, where people looked at for understanding MD simulation results and all that, looked at non-self-consistent MCT. But later on, it is these sort of self-consistent formulation of the theory which became relevant for glassy behavior, and it comes from this nonlinear effects that one can calculate. But one of the drawbacks of this is that it only calculates this correction of the nonlinearities to a low order in the perturbation theory. That means if you only consider effects where we in field theory language we call one loop diagrams, or you look at effects which are only evolved at the Gaussian level. So you replace 4-point correlation functions by products of 2-point correlation functions. So all this thing comes when you want to deal with these nonlinear equations, the effect of the nonlinearities on the transport coefficients and all that, at the lowest order in a perturbation theory. So what yes.
Perturbation parameter.
In this case, it is the KBT. You can organize the theory in terms of the KBT, but there is no certainty that the higher order terms are becoming small. And so you just simply ignore the two-loop order. Of course, there is a parameter, KB. You can organize the theory in orders of KBT.
But the nonlinear term, if it's in there, it's zero temperature, and can't resum those.
Not in this case. Well, at least here we are looking at the theory where you have the correction terms coming in orders of KBT, because the correction that comes in this is order by order gives rise to an order KBT term. So in principle there is a small parameter which are controlling the subsequent terms, but you when you look at the effects in the usual MCT, you just look at the one loop order.
Can I just ask physically, I mean, just with MCT that Matthias Fuchs and Thomas Voigtman talked about, where they start from a Smoluchowski equation.
Yeah.
Then the way you're starting the software, I mean, in both cases there are feedback mechanisms.
Yes.
Is the physics genuinely different, or where
I don't think the physics changes much. But
is it just a different mathematical way of constructing an MCT, like slowdown?
Yeah. You construct the equations, the memory functions, from a different approach. What we do is we usually construct this using, so you have a nonlinear equation, from this you write down a MSR type field theory, and then you look at the corrections order by order. So at the one loop order you stop. There it gets termed as, you get some kind of 4-point correlation function. You replace that by product of 2-point correlation function, and then you call that Kawasaki approximation.
But you're doing it for both density and momentum fields.
Yes. There also you do it for density and momentum field, but at some point you and not in the smaller case. I'm talking about the usual hydrodynamic case. Yeah, in the smaller case. Yeah, that is.
At some point you replace the momentum by density.
Yeah, you do this adiabatic approximation. Okay, so what I attempted is actually solving these equations on a grid. And this is something that earlier Chandan Dasgupta and Oriel Walls, they have worked on. So I'll come to that point where we did something different. And of course, they were mainly studying hard sphere system. We have here looked at Leonard Jones system, but there are more important differences. So we basically worked with the density and the momentum field, and we have this fluctuating nonlinear Langevin equations, so we solve them on a grid, and with periodic boundary conditions, we use white Gaussian white noise. Of course, you scale the variables and all that. Basically, there are two scales entering this thing. One is the structure of the liquid, and that is the you give it as an input, because in all this calculation, you're solving it like a time, time correlation function. So you give the initial structure, and that inherently brings that comes in here to the Einstein-Zernike kind of direct correlation function. So there the structure enters. So let's say if we are doing Lennard-Jones potential or Hertzsprung potential, there is a basic hard core of the system. That length scale enters the problem. Then of course there is the lattice grid on which the equations are solved. So that solution is there, and we usually take this ratio less than different from one, so that it doesn't find a easy way to crystallize.
Sorry, I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
Solving the differential equations are
okay. Right.
Solving the parameters of the equations will come.
No. But there is a parameter of the equation. In the parameter of the equation, there is the static structure factor. So when you put the static structure factor, there is a C of R.
In principle, your equations can give DG.
You mean?
Crystallization.
DF, yes. If I take that free energy functional, which is like the, yes, it can.
And your freezing, your lattice parameter is much larger than the discretization.
No, actually, the sigma is larger than the discretization.
Okay.
The other way. So this is the structure of the equations, that I discretize and all that. One of the crucial thing in this is this. Kind of convolution term that comes with the direct correlation function of the fluid and the density fluctuation. And this, when you multiply it with n of x, this gives us basically the basic nonlinear coupling of the density fluctuations, which gives rise to the standard MCT. I have no time to go into to prove this statement, but this is what you find. This is a density fluctuation delta n times, if you expand it around its equilibrium value, then this gives a delta n kind of coupling. It's the density fluctuation coupling, and this is the term that gives rise to this this feedback mechanism.
Shankar, can you sort of take a pause and say where you're going with this, because you're presenting a long calculation?
No, I'm not presenting. I'm just showing the equation. I'll just come in the next class points.
Yes, for some of us, it will help to know
okay.
What the goal is.
So basically what we are trying to do is, we have got, first of all, I let me summarize a little bit. I have tried to argue that you can obtain these correlation functions from basic equations of the fluid. So one of the way to do that is to formulate from the basic equations of the fluid the mode coupling theory and all that. But here, what I am trying here is to solve those equations directly on a lattice, so that I don't go into a perturbative calculation. So these are the basic equations, and now I'll show you what are the the results of the solution.
So how is the
lattice parameter for the discretization relate to the mean free path? It seems slightly strange that you're trying to resolve notionally continuum fields on length scales below particle radius.
Yes.
That's effectively what you're doing.
Yeah, but see, the mean free path that you're talking about, that's, you're talking about the fluid, the uniform fluid state.
For example.
Yeah. So that is coming into the theory in terms of the structure of the liquid. So one can calculate the mean free path corresponding to that state, or one can also calculate it from the solution of this density fluctuation itself, that if you can estimate what would be such a mean free path.
So this way of doing it, in addition to, as compared to a mode coupling kind of scheme, you are sort of introducing in a non-refinable way an approximation in the form of the free energy functional.
No. The free energy functional is the same. The equations are the same. What is happening is, in the usual MCT, what you do is, you have the equations, and from there, from these nonlinear equations, if you take the linear equation and then correct the bare transport coefficients that are in the linear equation by adding the corrections which are coming from these nonlinear couplings, you will get order by order corrections. What you do in MCT is you throw away all the higher order terms and only look at the lowest order correction and formulate a theory. What I am trying to do here is to look at the original equations and solve them on the computer and then calculate the correlation function.
Right, but if I, sorry, maybe I said it wrong, you're right, because in what I had in mind is that if I'm doing a numerical calculation for MCT, I could actually use structure factors that I get somehow.
Right.
Which will be more accurate than what a static calculation than what I might get from looking at some particular closure approximation.
Yes.
Which is also going into your free energy function here. So
those approximations you're talking about, these are related to the statics. So let's say how you close the equation.
That's going into your system.
But we are starting here also from the same static structure factor as goes into the MCT.
Yeah,
so there is no difference. Yeah.
No, what I meant was,
yeah. No, there is no difference.
Calculation, I could do better in terms of the static input that I take.
That you can always do in either case. You can put better static input. You know, in MCT also you can put better static input and try to see how that will modify.
So, but I mean, the closure, there is a finite number of closure approximations that you have.
You can always check this, and you put in a C.
Yes.
You get the density, measure the density correlation.
Yeah.
And get a renormalized C.
Yeah, but see, this is not the, I know what you are saying, trying to make it self-consistent. But remember, when we get this equation, you are making that expansion around a uniform state. And I'm approximating that uniform state as the uniform liquid state. So I don't want to make it self-consistent, because if it was a self-consistent calculation, if I try to do the self-consistent, then it would be like really looking at the density correlation function itself, and then it is evolving into the time-dependent part. But when you construct these equations, you are writing an equation for the density fluctuation. So you are making an expansion around the uniform state. And that uniform state I'm approximating by C of R.
So if I understand, I'm trying to summarize for myself. You can consider the equations you have as a model.
Yes.
Forget where they come from,
A
model.
Yeah.
And then you're checking the direct numerical simulation solution of this model to the mode coupling approximation of this model. Is this right?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm trying to do, I'll show the result, but let me summarize it. Yes, suppose I have these equations, even if I don't worry where it comes from. Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is solve those equations and calculate the correlation functions that MCT will calculate. Okay.
Right, but you can do it by MCT directly with the approximation, or by just solving the equation on the grid.
Yeah, so I'm doing that second thing you are saying, and I'm calculating the correlation function. Then I'll compare that with the simulations of such systems. And next is, what I want to do is I want to calculate the four-point function and see how they will behave.
Also compare to MCT.
Pardon?
It would also be interesting to compare to MCT.
Yeah, I'll indicate you how.
But
okay.
MCT itself predicts that there is the divergence gets cut off because of momentum, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're trying to see if that is also accurate, or?
No, that comes here. You'll see that.
The MCT result is very sensitive to S of T, right?
Yes.
So what you assume is very critical, right?
You mean what I give as an input S of K?
Yeah.
Yes. Those are other aspects of it. That what you take at S of K, that will change, you know, the where the transition will occur and all that. But of course, it is not that it doesn't occur. It will change most probably the transition point. In some cases, it may be shifted, but at least the usual hard sphere thing people have seen, or Leonard Jones. Okay. So one of the things that we did, which Chandan Dasgupta and others, they actually got limited here, was that when they were solving this equation, this these noises were creating sometimes negative density at certain sites because of just the numerical integration, and that was plaguing the sort of the calculation. So what Jalui and I did was that we looked at the solution at each stage and did a coarse graining. See, this density field that we are talking about is basically a coarse grained field. Integration of it over a certain volume gives you the number of particles in that volume. So what we did is at each stage we looked at the density and checked if it is negative. If it is negative, then we change the density slightly by taking density from a neighboring site so that the total density is still conserved, but the density remains overall positive. Once you correct it in this kind of coarse graining way at each stage, what happened?
Just do something. Press a button.
Okay.
No, but you can't formulate these iterative equations in a way that the positivity is automatically respected.
No, at least that we you can go to very very short time scales. You know, the time increment it moves forward, but then you are practically off from going to very any considerable time. So what Chandon and others did, they took the noise correlation and they tuned the noise correlation by some the strength of the noise correlation by some arbitrary factor, and then kept the solution. What we did is instead of using any arbitrary parameter there, we did this coarse graining at each stage. And once it remains stable for some time, then the solution could continue to very long time.
Log of the density.
That doesn't work. that's an easy. We tried that. That doesn't work.
Am I right to think that comes back to the issue of your discretization scale? I mean, you principally have a theory where you assume sort of small density fluctuations that are nearly Gaussian.
No, it is not that. It happens even when these fluctuations are not very large. It's just the noise can arbitrarily go up, and you know, it's a completely random noise. And your time, the incremental time that you are using, basically that is you are limited by up to what time you want to go, and it just cannot be.
You can't do something like an event-driven thing for hard spheres where you just calculate the time until the density goes to zero.
Because it happens randomly at
sure,
arbitrary site.
Sure, in principle you could do it adaptively like that.
Yeah, you mean adaptive step kind of thing. That
is it easier than a glass transition?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the form of that function I was saying that is the nonlinear appears in a nonlinear term, and this is where the C of R goes in, and because you are assuming isotropic situation, it is taken as a function of the shell radius.
I thought that would be a way of doing it too, because you basically adapt the step size if you go in too far.
Yeah, but see, it occurs randomly certain times in certain sites.
So then you globally rescale your step size.
And at each site, and also it's not clear whether it is occurring just because of the step size. But of course, if you keep the step size really, really small, the chances of occurring become small, because even if the noise goes
so
very high.
Obviously, it's happening because of a discretization in your integration
of
the equations, right? So
that is in principle a way to look at it. But in practice, if you try to do it at every time step, you know, at every site, it becomes a completely hopeless job, because you are dealing with large number of points. And
you should see where it goes.
Yeah, that's true.
Then there will be time for private discussion.
Okay, so here we just check the correlation functions, the static correlation function that we get. And one other thing we tested was if I just consider the linear theory, and if I consider the nonlinear coupling of the density fluctuation, you can see the static correlation function is not changed very much. One can also plot it as the time evolves at two q's, and of course, as the system equilibrates, it goes to the equilibrium value.
Don't know what your symbols are.
Pardon?
Don't know what your symbols are. The blue, the black, and the red.
Okay, that's what I said. This is the blue ones are the one with the linear equations. So if I solve the linear equations, then the and I calculate the density fluctuations, I take equal time correlation, and then plot that. So that is the equal static correlation function. This is one if I solve the full equations that I showed. So I do not just limit myself to linear equation. I take the nonlinear full nonlinear equation and I solve it. So the static what I'm saying is the static correlation function is not changed much as we include the nonlinear couplings. This is of course the one that you get with the input C of R for the uniform state. So if I take the input C of R that has gone and I calculate the S of K from that, that is this curve. Yeah.
Sorry, that's a huge change in structure.
Which one? You mean these two?
First of all, I mean, yeah.
Why?
I don't think I would see this much change in structure factor if I calculate, if I change the temperature by a factor of 10 at constant density.
Yeah, but
so no,
if you look at static structure factor, the peak position hardly shifts over wide range of density. You know, if you're talking, these I'm saying that this is the result that comes out of the nonlinear equation. And what I'm saying is the relative change is smaller. Much smaller.
What is the red dotted line?
Red dotted line is the C of R. If I take the C of R and then that is
that line.
S of Q from that. So that's the uniform.
Why does the structure factor look like this? I mean, where did that? What are you modeling here?
Well, this is the you have input the equilibrium static structure factor, right? The C of R. So you'll expect that. Yeah, it's for consistency. This is just for consistency.
Just for not particularly for any.
No, when you are solving this equation, you have to give the initial values, na? So you give the initial S of K. And then you solve it, and of course the system is not in the uniform state, but you are expanding around the uniform state, and then you calculate. So you would expect that you will show a similar sort of structure. But what I'm saying is, between equilibrium and non-equilibrium, it is not. Between linear and non-linear, it is not changing much.
And the fact that the S of Q in the nonlinear theory, in the black line, it seems to go almost to zero within your accuracy.
Yeah, because we are doing this only over a finite size box. So you are not really, you are limited over certain Q range, you know, to really look at it. So, and also then there is coarse graining. So you cannot really trust this thing for large scale.
Those arguments would seem to only apply on one side though.
Exactly. No. But also the blue line, blue dots are probably for the same.
The blue dot case, it's a linear equation. So, you know, you can even look at it analytically. What the solution. But of course, this is numerical solution. But
for the same grid
For the same grid, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so you can't just give a grid. There's lots of how to look
at. I think I have a stupid question. I don't understand the difference between the red, the input and the output. What is this business of uniform or non-uniform? Basis?
No. The input thing is, when I'm solving these equations, this is an equation for the density fluctuation. Okay?
I understand, yes.
So we have, if the system was in a uniform liquid state, there would be a corresponding C of R. So you are doing an expansion around that C of R. But of course, the system is fluctuating around, it's not in a uniform state. So where we are finding it in some kind of a metastable state, and presumably this is the structure factor for that.
But this is in the liquid.
Yeah, this is in the liquid glass. liquid means in the supercooled region.
Right, but the system on average is uniform. So what does it mean?
No,
it has fluctuations which are given by the S of Q, but it's.
This is something that if the system is stuck in a metastable state, then I'm saying that this is the S of K for that.
But it is not supposed to be stuck in a metastable state above minimal coupling transition. Is it at very, very low?
This is at up to a certain time.
Uniform refers to the single point density, which is
uniform.
Uniform density.
Yeah, so the structure factor should be the same, the input and the output is the one is.
The output calculation is if I take the density fluctuation at that at a given time, and I take the correlation.
Yes, but that precisely the S of Q that you put in the original calculation.
That S of Q is the S of Q for the uniform liquid state around which I am making an expansion to obtain the fluctuating hydrodynamic equation.
So are you saying that even though you parameterize in the regime where you should be in the supercooled liquid, not in the glass, the state that you're describing with your black and blue dots is somehow a metastable glass?
Whatever way you want to differentiate it, but it's a supercooled liquid regime where I'm not in the in the completely uniform state. And then I look at the dynamic correlation.
Why is the linear theory any different from the original?
But the linear theory doesn't have any mode coupling. No, but see, that difference is not because of mode coupling, the linear. What I'm saying is this is the state which is the uniform liquid state around which I'm doing the fluctuating hydrodynamic equation. So it's the C of R as an input like that. So one can actually, what Surajit was saying, one can actually iterate this thing and try to get to an uniform state from there, but that's not the goal here. So one can look at the dynamic correlation, and of course, if I solve the linear equation, this will, you know, decay on a time scale like this.
Okay, so just to summarize what I understood. So you're looking at a uniform liquid free energy minimum.
Yes.
So you're looking at the fluctuations around
that. Around that.
You don't have to solve for the dynamics.
Right.
But if you do everything perfectly, you should get the same structure factor. I mean, you should get the equilibrium.
If the system has equilibrated back to that, you know, the low.
Right.
That's
but
right.
If you wait long enough,
yes.
So there's no problem. And then the blue and the black are different because of linearization.
Linearization. So the linear, when you consider the nonlinear fluctuations, then you see the static structure factor is different. And what I'm trying to say is that
the they
are different from each other because of linearization. The reason that they're different from the red curve is another one.
That's the direct correlation. That's completely
different.
No, it's not the direct.
It's
the
correct. You have to get it from the
right.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do the calculation.
Well, you have to do one over. I can't do it.
I can't do it anymore.
I don't understand. So, what are you saying?
No, we just discussing the red curve. The red curve is certain.
The red curve, as I said, it's the original input.
One minus rho.
Yeah, right. C of R. Yeah. That is red curve.
Right.
So
just one more question.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Suppose you do this whole calculation at very low density.
Yes.
Do you get back the red curve?
Well, I will expect if I go to really low density, the red curve and the black curve should become same. Yeah. Naturally, it will very quickly equilibrate into that state.
Because of the discretization, you're not getting there. The C of Q and S of Q don't look like they correspond to each other, right? And that's because of the discretization you're doing before you solve for the S of Q by putting in the C of R, correct?
Let me go back.
But the fluctuations part, I still don't understand. Where does that come from?
Yeah. What are you saying?
No. So the black S of Q is not looking like it corresponds to the red C of R.
Yes.
Because you solved this after you discretize the equations.
Right. And
we should not talk about C of R. I mean, the red thing is also an S of Q.
Yes.
It's just the input S of Q.
It is the input S of Q. This is what I'm trying to say. It is the input S of Q for the uniform state, if the liquid was a completely uniform uniform liquid. See, when you do density functional theory, you always expand the free energy of the liquid around some uniform state. But that's not the state of the system.
Okay.
So if I was taking the uniform liquid state, I would expect that as the density goes very low, then I will expect them to corresponding more closely, but not in the supercooled state. Of course, there is effect of discretization and all that is showing up here, but I would not expect this will become identical to this at very, very supercooled density. It will happen at high density, that when it will very quickly equilibrate to the uniform state. But the basic equations are expansion around the uniform state. The same thing you do in a density functional calculation. You take fluctuations around the around the uniform liquid state, and then you write down the free energy in terms of that.
No, but the structure factor is an average quantity, no?
Right.
Fluctuation should not contribute. I don't understand.
It's a structure factor is an average quantity of two-point correlation function. So we look at that time correlation function, and then you see the very big difference. Okay, the dashed curve here is actually from the MD simulation of Ulu and Ip, and this time is in units of Leonard Jones time. So this is Leonard Jones time, and other than this the short time bare transport coefficient, everything else is just determined here, without any adjustable parameter. So it shows quite a bit of agreement. Of course, if I do the usual MCT, this someone asked that what would be the if I do the usual MCT at this density, the usual MCT equations with the input structure factor, you'll see the correlation function going completely freezing at this density. So that is that is the difference that you see. And of course, I think you were saying the momentum coupling and all that. So when we have constructed those equations, the momentum couplings and all these are there. So you can see the effect of that showing up in the dynamics. So if I take a completely linear dynamics, then it decays very fast. If I take the usual MCT kind of calculation, one loop calculation, it gets completely frozen. And then this is the same system that we have looked at. This is for cut Leonard Jones. Ulu and Ip did long time back, but this is the only one component Leonard Jones, one component, and they're not going to very long time.
So that means that the higher order terms actually have a negative effect.
Higher order terms are there, then there are coupling to momentum, as you said. So all these things are now included in there.
MCT, you said, with momentum coupling or the?
The MCT, I said, which will freeze.
Yeah.
That is without momentum coupling. If I take the momentum coupling and then, of course, use this cutoff as a parameter that I did many years back, you can fit those data. But then you are using the cutoff as a parameter. Okay, this is at even higher density. Let me.
Sorry.
Yeah.
If you go to longer time, does it decay eventually or? Stays up
the house. This thing. See, this, let me. You're talking about this, right?
Yeah.
What happens is we have extended this to, I'll show you a full Leonard Jones calculation up to even 1,000 times Leonard Jones time. It decays. It's not showing much of plateau. But this is, of course, seeing like this because of the time. I just wanted to compare here. And the input structure factor again. We had to use the input structure factor for cut Leonard Jones to do the calculation. So it looks like it's freezing, but it's actually decaying.
So the black is the simulation.
Yes.
The red is the.
No, the black is the solution of the equation. The red is, I think, simulation, Ulu-Ip simulation. Okay, this I'm skipping. I guess this is technical. So basically, the two-point correlation function. This is, of course, done with full Leonard Jones, and you can see here just up to 1,000 times. It basically keeps showing the decay. One of the things we do not find here is is much of a plateau in this kind of, at least in this kind of simple model. What an interesting is that then we looked at.
Is the plateau being cut off by any chance?
Well, this is, I'm saying this is the full density. If you take the Lennard-Jones system and calculate the correlation function, this is what we're seeing. Of course, if I do a binary Lennard-Jones, my filling is some plateau like the kind of thing Kobe and Anderson has seen will show up. But solving these equations for binary Lennard-Jones system is another level of problem because you have more equations and all that. That most probably will do at some point. But in the simple Lennard-Jones, which I compared also with simulation, it doesn't show much of.
Q is at Q at the peak.
Q at the peak. That's right. Okay. This is roughly how the relaxation time is growing. It's growing by two, three orders.
From the data that if you look at the red curve, there is decay that has already taken place. Is this the same data? No, the same graph that you were showing. Go forward.
No. That is for full Lennard-Jones. But they're not very different. But you have to, this is 50. Yeah. So.
So the initial decay is.
So you are roughly here.
Correct. That's where the initial decay is, right? So usually that's why you see the plateau if you plot against long time.
Yeah. So in this case, it is not showing that. In this case, in the Lennard-Jones, one component Lennard-Jones system, we are not seeing that plateau.
I guess the question is, would you see it if you plotted the correlation function against log time?
No. Well, there is sort of, but not much of a plateau you can see in this. You are saying that if I change the t to log t, not much.
Because the initial decay is all washed out in the highest temperature. So.
Now, if I take the same, the same data that is producing this correlation function, of course, this is the relaxation time, how it is growing, the stressed exponential. Let me not. But now let me look at the 4-point correlation.
Stressed exponent was going up with decreasing temperature.
Okay. So we looked at the 4-point correlation function with the same quantity. First of all, this is a little bit like an order parameter in a phase transition sense, because this is usually it's worth pointing out that if I take the density correlation function as a kind of an order parameter which goes to non-zero at the transition, then the 4-point function can be put into a form of a fluctuation of a susceptibility. So it is like an order parameter correlation function. So what we did is looked at these from these data that produced this sort of correlation 2-point correlation functions. We took those and calculated basically the kind of quantities that Berthier and others calculated mainly for tacked particle motion. So there it was for tacked particle density and all that. Here we are doing it for the full density correlation function. And we calculated the 4-point function normalized with respect to the 2-point function. And these are at different, we did it at a constant pressure with different temperature. And as the temperature falls, the lines are fit to Lorentzian sort of form. Of course, here he has gone only up to this kind of time scale and then fitted it. But you can see it's clearly, whereas there's no plateau, it's clearly evidence of that 4-point function showing a peak. So it is definitely there that even if the 2-point function is not showing anything like a freezing, the 4-point function shows this effect. And in a sense, this 4-point function is a reflection of, again, the non-Gaussian behavior, because if I take this 4-point function and replace this by 2-point function, that's what gives rise to the usual, the simple MCT and all that. And that kind of approximation, this is like calculating the departure from this thing. And one sees the effect, the time at which it is occurring is increasing. And this, of course, we try to fit it following this approach of Birth theorem et al. Try to fit it to a Einstein Zernike form. So you fit, calculate this at Q's, and then normalize it, and it shows sort of fit. And one can identify a zeta, the length scale from there. And it shows a growth, but again, not very high. The peak position grows. This is something. This is something I took directly from Berthier's, their JCP. This is how they found from the tacked particle motion, the length scale growing. So you see similar signatures here from this.
So this is, your data continue to be for single component limitations?
Single component, right. This is for binary. I think it's from the JCP. Mm-hmm. I think it's binary Lennard.
So now, change of the factor of pi?
Yeah.
That's what they
have. 1 to 5. On a linear scale. Okay. So, let me just summarize at least. So this part I have skipped because of technicality. I can discuss. So basically, we looked at this dynamic correlation identified from the four-point function, and it came from this solution of the fluctuating nonlinear hydrodynamic equations, which is the standard MCT equations. And what we see at least that while the density correlation doesn't show much signatures of freezing or anything, but the this growth in the four-point function is definitely there. This we have looked at in agreement with the earlier studies. I have skipped it, and so this length scale is going. We can use these approaches to calculate non-equilibrium dynamics also, because numerically, of course, calculating the non-equilibrium correlation is not much difficult. And I have sort of thought of talking of that, but maybe you can skip it. But one can calculate non-equilibrium correlations and look at aging effects and all this. This presently we are doing.